This is North Shore Community Radio, broadcasting at 90.7 FM WTIP Grand Marais, 90.1 FM WGPO Grand Portage, and 91.7 FM W219CU Gunflint Trail. Good evening. Welcome to First Thursday Community Conversation. With Barbara Jean Johnson, I'm Jay Anderson. Each month, we choose a topic for discussion, invite guests into the studio, and invite you to join in the conversation. Tonight, we've invited several community leaders to help us briefly look back at 2009, but we'll spend most of the broadcast looking ahead 1, 3, 5, even 10 years. What lies ahead for us in education, city and county government, local health care, and business. Cook County, the past year and the long look ahead. We invite you to call in with your questions and comments. Was 2009 a good year for you? What are your hopes and concerns for the coming years? The number to call is 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. Our email address is wtip@boreal.org. What do you see as the challenges and opportunities for our county? Joining us in the studio to sort out the past and speculate on the future are five people who will be a part of any changes and challenges that we face in the near future. Beth Schwartz is Cook County Schools ISD 166 Superintendent. Bob Fenwick is 3rd District County Commissioner. Dr. Sandy Stover is a longtime physician with Sawtooth Mountain Clinic. Sue Hakes is the Grand Marais Mayor. And Scott Harrison is a local businessman and owner of Lutzen Resort. Welcome to all of you, and thanks for taking the time to be with us this evening. I'd like to begin by asking each of you for a brief reflection on the past year and then to get out your crystal balls and look into the future. So let's begin with you, Beth Schwartz. What kind of a year has it been for Cook County Education?
Well, Jay, as you know, I started in July, so I can really only comment on what I've observed since then and what I've seen I really like. ISD is a school of excellence, with a lot of hardworking, dedicated faculty and support staff. Students and parents that I've seen have been really awesome as well. We recently adopted a curriculum for reading called Storytown, which is going very well, and the implementation has been awesome. The board has been open to new leadership structure, and that's beginning to take shape. And so, yeah, things are going really well at Cook County Schools.
Well, we can go into greater detail later in the program, but what does it look like for ISD 166 over the next several years?
Well, unfortunately, we do have declining enrollment and several financial challenges ahead, and that's probably going to be with us for the next 3 to 5 years, given the economy. On the positive side, the resident survey has provided us with a lot of valuable information. Change for the sake of change can be a disaster, but with well-planned change based on data, things look pretty exciting.
Well, Mayor Sue Hakes, what kind of a year has it been for the city of Grand Marais?
Well, Jay, I think from the city's perspective, it's been very productive. I think the council has kind of fallen into its own groove. We had two new members this year, including me, and we've really learned how to work together. Early in the year, we set priorities and goals for 2009-2010. We've achieved and accomplished in a couple of those completely, and we're working on others, making progress on all of them. And we're pretty happy about that. I think, though, for some of the residents and business owners within our town, it's been a little bit more of a struggle this year. And so when we look to the future, we want to make sure that anything we do impacts as positively as we can jobs and the economic forecast.
Well, you have set some goals and objectives, as you said, and how does that look for the city's future in the next several years?
Well, you know, Jay, this question, what's your vision for Grand Marais, was one of the questions that was asked at the candidate forum in way back in 2008. And my vision is just really, really positive, and I think we can accomplish a lot of it. I mean, I see a thriving economy 12 months a year instead of 5. I see growing enrollment in our schools, sailboats and fishing boats next to each other in a harbor and in a marina, a beautiful new community center with a pool, an events pavilion hosting a governor's fishing opener and family reunions and things like that. I see the city and the county governments working really well together to find solutions for our residents. I see an EDA park filling up with businesses. I see safe and clean streets and parks and happy, healthy residents.
Well, on that really positive note, we invite our listeners to call in with your questions and comments. The number is 387-1070, 800-473-9847. Our email address, wtip@boreal.org. We're looking back for a while at 2009, and we're taking a long look ahead for Cook County. Again, 387-1070, 800 473-9847 or email us WTIP@boreal.org. Now, Dr. Sandy Stover, you've been a doctor in the county for quite a while now.
20 years.
What kind of a year has it been in local health care?
Well, it's been a good year. You know, we've had the loss of one doctor. We lost actually to economic woes. She had to return to the Twin Cities for financial reasons. And then we were lucky enough to gain Dr. Sampson, who we've been delighted to have join us. And so that's been very positive. I think the other big thing has been our electronic health records. We've joined the 21st century. We're electronic. That will continue to expand and allow more and more access for individuals to their own health records, which is a good thing. I think the other thing that was really interesting to watch this year was the whole response to the H1N1 flu situation and the excellent coordination between public health and clinic and the hospital in providing immunizations as well as coordinating the emergency plans that came into they did not have to be used to the extent that they were planned for, but it was a lovely coordinated effort.
Well, what lies ahead? Rural health care, there's some challenges ahead in the next few years.
You know, the issues that are coming from a federal perspective are scary. I think most individual physicians are really don't know what's coming, you know, let alone the legislators. I mean, we could have a long discussion about that. But I think we're kind of a microcosm of what's going on federally. We have issues that will be faced in our community on our elder care. We need more support services in place for our elder care. We're an aging population, and we don't have a good infrastructure for that particular group. I think mental health provisions could certainly be fluffed up a bit. I think that's also a state issue as well as federal. And I think we need adequate providers, and that touches on all the other folks that are represented here. We need good schools to help train our techs and our nurses and our physicians. The rural Minnesota is definitely underserved. We're lucky in our community that we are as well served as we are, although we could certainly use another physician. If anyone out there is interested, call me later. But I think overall we are lucky because we have a fairly stable work population now, which is nice.
Well, Commissioner Fenwick, what kind of a year has it been for Cook County?
Well, thank you, Jay. It would come as no surprise to anybody in Cook County that what dominated our agenda was the 1% sales tax discussion, the vetting of the different issues, and finally the referendum, which I think was a good thing that it was passed. It's good from the standpoint of we got plenty of opportunity in front of us, but a lot of difficult decisions to make as to how to carry those things out. Then I would also characterize the rest of the year as being not surprising to the county officials financially. We knew it was coming. Counties as a whole responded to the state's needs and I think carried the ball quite well in responding the way they did. But we are with all the other counties and kind of waiting for the other shoe to fall. And that's how I would characterize the end of 2009 as what in the heck is going to happen financially with the state and how we'll respond to it.
Well, you do have some big issues on the table emerging over the next few years. How do we look locally about that?
Well, in a very general sense, and we'll probably talk about some of the specific things later on, but in a very general sense, because of our close ties to the state, we cannot ignore the fact that we're probably looking at out in 2012-2013 biennium anywhere from a $4 to $6 billion state deficit. And this is a deficit that, as difficult as the past one or the one we're in now was to fix, this one will be almost impossible using the means that they use now. So we can't go into that as citizens not looking for some significant tax hikes along with some big cuts. That would be number one that we're looking out there. Number two, I think, in a very general sense, the county is looking to carry out its obligations on the 1% referendum and make sure those things get done well. And then if I might add, I think from the county standpoint, if I could put it this way, I've got it down here as government relation and restructuring. I don't think that counties can avoid in its relationship with the state, changes that are going to be quite substantial in how we deliver services, how we share services. I mean, even the discussion about whether there should be 87 counties may very well come up in the discussions as we look to the future here.
Well, Scott Harrison, you told me before we went on the air, you've been here about 20 years. So how's business lately?
Well, I've got a more rugged assessment than some of my peers around the table here. If you go back to 2008, Jay, the lodging tax component of this county is about $25 million. And last year, about $2.5 million of that was shrunk, disappeared. And if you multiply that by the impact of the lack of visitors that didn't come up on the gas business, clothing, food and beverage business, the art business, the hospitals and the clinics, there was significant shrinkage of this economy in 2008.
What about the future? That looked just as grim?
No, fortunately.
Woo, good.
But, I have to say I've got pretty muted enthusiasm for the next year or two. You know, if you look nationally, we still have a very sluggish labor market. We've got high unemployment. It's 10% now for those that are fighting claims. It's another 7% that those are unemployed and not looking for claims. That's one out of every six people in this country. If you look at the private mortgage market, 23% of those are underwater. That's one for every four people. The banks, the credit market has tightened significantly, and there's a lot of monetary and fiscal policy doing its best to resurrect that. Some of that's going to go away. So I have to say I'm looking forward to a better 09, but it is with muted enthusiasm.
Dr. Stover, I want to get back to something that you mentioned. You said that you lost a doctor this year for economic reasons, and I'm wondering, what does that mean for our community? What does that say? I know it's a challenge oftentimes for people to come here and to kind of make it. And how can we address those issues?
Well, that's a tough one because it isn't just physicians. It certainly involves all the medical staff our x-ray techs, our nursing assistants, our nurses, you know, to come to a community as a professional looking for, well, you look for a community that's supportive of the schools, you look for a community that's supportive for your spouse to be able to work. You know, that's kind of a big question. I know the state's addressed it in looking at how do you encourage kind of cross-community education so that kids who grew up in a rural area, they tend to stay in a rural area. And how do you train them in Cook area to come over to Cook County? You know, how do you do that? Is that kind of what you're pointing at, I guess? Is that...
Yeah, you know, I'm just wondering. I mean, I know, and Sue Hakes, you also mentioned that, you know, economic viability is a big part of your goals for this community. And so, you know, if we're losing people, obviously, you know, we don't want to keep doing that. We want to probably find ways for people to be able to make it and survive and thrive in our community and contribute. So,
well, and one of the things that happened with Dr. Moriarty, who many people here know, is that she came up after having purchased a house in the Twin Cities where she was working, had an opportunity to come up here, which she'd been working at for some time, and could not sell her house in the Twin Cities. Unfortunately, she bought high, couldn't sell low, and they have a young family and they couldn't afford, you know, two houses of any size. And that's again, of a global concern, coming back to our economy coming around to allow people to balance some of the losses. We're not going to recover a lot of those mortgage costs. They're just lost. A lot of families are paying for that with you know, lost jobs and single income families now. In terms of locally, I think the way that we do it is like we often have. People have more than one job. They think creatively, outside the box in terms of how to put that together. It's a little easier in a rural area to see that. I don't think you see it in an urban area as much, you know, what some of the choices people make, because, you know, you at this table, I mean, I know everybody at this table in ways that have nothing to do with my profession, but all to do with the fact that we, you know, share kids at certain events, you know, and I know, you know, Sue Hakes from boating, and so we know people in different ways, and that's the breadth, that's the richness of a rural community.
From the school standpoint, affordable housing is going to become a real issue. A number of our staff are approaching retirement age, and one of the concerns that is coming out on the survey from the employee standpoint is how are we going to recruit and retain new teachers with the housing market in Cook County. And I think that looking at affordable housing is huge, and is something that Cook County is going to have to deal with in the long run.
Anybody want to weigh in on that from the county or city?
Well, I think affordable housing is always an issue in this town and other communities as well. One thing that is good about the recent downturn in real estate is that houses are becoming more affordable in Cook County, and houses in the $150,000 range are becoming more available than they had. As far as the city's perspective is goes, you know, outside of affordable housing, you know, everything we do to improve our city or the infrastructure or anything we can do to improve the downtown business community helps somebody either improve or secure or create a job. And if, so if we can work on that as best that we can, you know, through, you know, friendly zoning and expansion for businesses that need to expand and trying to decorate downtown so that we can get tourists here and filling up that EDA park if we can, perhaps then we do create jobs for a spouse or something like that. We may not solve that specific problem, but every time we do something to better the community, we actually, you know, secure a job or hopefully create a job in some instances.
We invite you to call in with your questions and comments. The number is 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. Or you can email us at WTIP@boreal.org. We're taking the long look ahead for Cook County now. So if you're interested and have a question or a comment, 387-1070, 800-473-9847. Mayor Hakes, you were talking about some things that you have in mind for the future, but local government aid, let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. Grand Marais saw some of its state aid unallotted in 2009. There's promise of more cuts to come. As well, payments are being held back or shifted. This is also what's happening in the school district. So how do you plan for a city budget under these circumstances? Is there anything left to cut?
Well, yes, there is. And we've actually, we started working on the budget last year, I think in February or March, and we held budget meetings at least every other month. And we got the department heads involved and city staff involved. And we started taking a good hard look at what we really needed to do and where we could cut back. And we stayed in tune, of course, with what we thought the projected cuts or unallotments might be. And so we were well aware of that. And we ended up in pretty good shape. We're lucky this year. We've got a contingency plan. I think if the LGA cut, with the LGA cuts with respect to those, we always hope for the best and plan for the worst. And one thing I'd like to mention in the city of Grand Marais, we have two gifts. And I hope that people realize the benefit of these gifts. And that's the rec park and the liquor store. And if we didn't have the money that we got from the rec park and that liquor store, this town would have a much different look and feel. And so you'll notice that I do everything I can to protect those two assets because they bring in $300,000-$400,000 to our town, which is a huge amount.
One of the things that always comes up when we talk about having to cut services is public safety. Is public safety on the block at all?
No, it really isn't. And I think the bare bones of any city is to provide services, and public safety is really at the top of that list. So I think that would be one of the very last things that we would cut.
Well, we're in the middle of the big health care story at the end of the year and the beginning of this 2010. Federal reform legislation, Dr. Stover, what in that legislation could actually affect the delivery of health services in the county?
Pretty much everything, and that's going to affect local health care delivery. You know, the problem for so many of us is that this is a multi-thousand-page document that even the legislators themselves don't understand, you know, in all honesty. I had a very interesting seminar I got to attend that was where a presentation was given by a woman who works at the Washington, D.C. level from the she's not an elective official. She's one of the, basically a specialist in health care. And her frustration was every time something came up that was would solve or coordinate some issues together that could help solve a problem or fill a need, the special interest tended to get it shot down in committee level. And because we would bring things up in this group, it was a group of people from the Bush Fellowship, and she'd say, "Oh, we tried that, but someone said they couldn't do that because of the pharmaceutical industry in their, you know, their district, whatever." And so I think the difficulty that we're going to face with this initial healthcare plan is it's not the final one. And so the changes that happen that we'll see are going to change again because they have to, because it's right now it's of a shadow of what it could be. I think overall, seniors will be protected. They're not going to lose services. There's going to be a shifting of where the money is going to be coming. Generally, because of in our community, we have a community health center, which allows us to receive funding in a different way than most small town private clinics are, that the clinic will continue to see some of that support. It allows us to do some of the special projects, some of the diabetes care and some of the school interactive projects that have been going on, the SHIP grant. The hospital has probably and the nursing home is probably going to be hit more to a greater degree, both from state budget issues. The care center is in danger, you know, from some of those budget issues. I think the hospital is facing a lot of challenges. One of the reasons they're looking having some assistance from management outside the community. So, on a day-to-day basis, I think people won't see the ability to access healthcare in a different way than they have been. What they'll see is a different way that they'll have to approach their insurance issues. And, you know, how that's going to play out, there's going to be, again, even from what's written and what's being passed now, there'll be different manifestations and how it filters through the state level. So I'm going to plead total ignorance and say, I don't know. But basically, at least in our community, we have access to some pretty good health care and the ability to transfer to a very good tertiary care center in the Duluth system.
Well, Scott Harrison, anything that has to do with health care is going to ripple on down through the business community in as much as that's the way the whole healthcare system is, to a large extent, funded. How's business going to win or lose on this one so far?
Well, we're going to win for our people, Jay, because the objective is a great one. The problem, and the details are yet to be fleshed out, but from my perspective, if the financing is going to be all on employers, none on employees, and none from the public sector, it's going to be very difficult fiscally for the businesses I'm familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Well, and ultimately, I'll just chime in, the public option is kind of what, at least from the physician perspective, most of the groups I talk to, it will ultimately be what will make a universal healthcare system work, is to have a public option.
Well, if a business is not capable of providing the kind of healthcare that I as a worker want, how does that affect the job market here? And how does that affect business in general?
Well, if you want to compare us to some of the major corporations elsewhere in urban centers, that's never been a comparable equation.
Okay. ISD 166 board, Beth Schwartz, is investigating moving to a four-day week in the possibly 2011 school year. Now, what are the advantages and challenges of implementing a four-day week?
Well, Jay, it's actually kind of an exciting concept to look at. We do know that any major change in scheduling, such as moving to a four-day week, is going to require a lot of communication. And the community is going to have the opportunity to share their thoughts, and we will provide them with a lot of education on the four-day week before moving forward with that. However, we do see it as a viable option and that we do need to look at it and look at it seriously. The research suggests not only a significant cost savings, but more important, there tends to be a lot of advantages academically for students. And what we see are what the schools, districts that have had gone to a four-day week, particularly out in the western states such as Arizona, they see improved attendance, they see improved morale, lower dropout rates, students report less stress, so they have fewer student mental health issues. And there's fewer discipline issues. The impact, though, on standardized test scores is still unclear, and there doesn't appear now to be any significant impact, either positive or negative. So as we look at the four-day week, the schools in the state, there's four of them who presently have the four-day week in place, and their feedback has been very positive. So, again, it's something that the district is seriously looking at. And this spring, your listeners can look for meetings and for information on that and a chance to share their thoughts on what that scheduling would do.
How would ISD 166 moving to a four-day week affect the charter schools?
Well, we do provide transportation for GES students, and so that's obviously the district or the charter school that would be most impacted, and obviously we'll have to have some conversations with the leadership over there to see what they think of the idea, how will it impact them, and we'll go from there.
We invite you to call in with your questions and comments. The number is 387-1070 or 800-473-9847. Email us at WTIP@boreal.org. We're taking the long look ahead for Cook County. And Commissioner Fenwick, many of the issues and opportunities that the county wants to deal with could hinge on your decision to hire a county administrator. So where do we see ourselves going in the coming year with that issue?
I honestly think the county board will make a decision on this one way or the other. I think they see the importance of either doing it or putting it to bed the other way. So that decision will be made, I do believe. What that person would do, I think, is significant in nature. Various people would describe the role of an administrator in different ways. I can give you my perspective on what I think it could do from the county standpoint.
Sure.
It sounds trite to say that person needs to carry on the day-to-day business of the county, but it is not trite. Most of the day-to-day business of the county in terms of what that person would do works on things that, by their very nature, does not sit in one department. Many of the things that the county does involves more than one department. And we do not have right now a very workable way to coordinate efforts that involve more than one department. That person would also do something that is a very difficult thing to do, and that's represent the county itself on a business basis to other governmental units like city, school, state, in a way that a individual county commissioner cannot do. A board can do a lot of things together, but one of the things that a county commissioner has difficulty doing is representing the board. He or she can represent themselves, but a very difficult time representing the board as a whole.
I'm going to interrupt you for a minute.
Sure.
We'll get back to this because we do have a couple of phone calls, and we want to get to those.
You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Frank Hansen. I'd like Bob Fenwick's recent remarks are appropriate. Back in the early 70s, when I was on the county board, we did have the same discussion. We did hire an excellent young man named Bob O'Connor. And frankly, he was systematically shot down by most of the commissioners and by the department heads. And I just wonder if Bob would comment about the atmosphere in the county government today. Are the commissioners welcoming the prospect of an administrator? Are the department heads welcoming the prospect of an administrator? What's the situation? Because unless there's harmonious feeling for the new appointee, it's going to be a tough road to hoe. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Frank.
Thank you, Frank. And we're very aware of that taking place, right? I'll speak for myself, very aware of something like that taking place. From the department head standpoint, I think the workload that the department heads are seeing on a day-to-day basis and the way they have had to cooperate through what we call our MAT team, a management group team, is not being able to fulfill what they would like to see happen. So my gut tells me that on the basis of how this could help coordinate the work with the department heads, I think it would be a welcome thing. From the standpoint of the county commissioners themselves, we're a mixed bunch, and I think each of us has a obligation to not only represent our own thoughts, but the thoughts of our constituents. And we all have different feelings as to how we are able to accomplish that with or without an administrator. I think the key thing that needs to happen here is that if, in fact, we go down that road, that we have to recognize where Cook County is, and that is in a very good spot of transition. We can't simply jump to an administrative setting that, say, St. Louis County has, or Hennepin County has, or larger counties than us. The individual that takes this position needs to recognize that we have to move very slowly from where we have a board that has done virtually everything from hiring to firing to doing HR, human resources work, those types of things, in a very much of a micromanaging situation, and doing it with not the best understanding, I'm speaking for myself too, not the greatest understanding of what an HR person definitely has to do in a complex world of employment. We need to move slowly to relinquish those things and turn them over. So I think how we move from where we are today to how we use an administrator in the future, this transition time, is the key thing we need to be concerned about, Frank, and be cognizant of.
Go ahead.
Frank, I just add another perspective on that. I think being familiar with the Cook County government, much of their time is not spent on strategy and policy. They are preempted and focused on the implementation side, and that is not good long-term for this county. So I very much support the hiring of an administrator.
Well, as long as you're there, Scott, I have another question for you. We've talked a lot about jobs and housing and all this kind of thing, but the visitor industry is dominant in the county economy. And what needs to be done to keep it healthy? Is that local, state, national? How do we keep business, the tourist business, healthy?
Let me give you a roundabout answer. I'm engaged in some research now on all the lodging tax collecting entities and communities throughout Minnesota. And while it's not published yet and probably released in 6 weeks or so, what you're going to see throughout rural Minnesota, where the dependence on tourism is a lot higher than urban communities, is probably aggregate growth in the neighborhood of 2% a year for the last decade. And when you operate for a decade where your revenues are growing at 2%, and that includes expansions and new development, by the way, and your operating costs are going up 3 to 4% a year, there's enormous pressure on the margins. This comes back to help address the question you asked earlier about, can private businesses afford the health care costs that are imminent? So two things that we're doing, one locally, and I think you're probably familiar with this. We've spent 6 months trying to think through and consider the consolidation of our tourism entities, Jamada, Gunflint Trail, LTTA, Grand Portage, and perhaps the Events and Visitors Bureau. We are well along that road, and I think that we're probably going to find the answer to that by February or March and maybe be live, hopefully, by the 1st of May. That will allow us to be more effective and more efficient with our resources. The second piece is, when we finish this research I've previously described, we would intend to go back to the legislature, maybe the governor's office, to see if we can't get more support for the tourism industry in Minnesota through Explore Minnesota. We are dramatically underfunded as a state relative to all of the neighboring states, including Canada. So those are the two themes that we're currently on.
Again, this is First Thursday Community Conversation on WTIP with Barbara Jean Johnson. I'm Jay Anderson. Tonight we're taking a long look ahead at the future of Cook County. Our guests are Mayor Sue Hakes, Commissioner Bob Fenwick, Dr. Sandy Stover, Superintendent Beth Schwartz, and businessman Scott Harrison. Join the conversation. If you have a question or comments about challenges and opportunities ahead for Cook County, give us a call. 387-1070, 1-800-473-9847, and of course, email WTIP@boreal.org. We have another caller.
You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Isaac Harris. I live in Holman right now, and I have a question.
Go ahead.
As far as the hiring of a new county employee, this administrator position, I've heard a lot about how it's going to help the county itself run operations, but how can you tell me how it's going to help the people of Cook County and those who are probably going to be paying for this?
Thanks for the call.
It's very easy to say that a county shouldn't hire an administrator unless it makes good sense financially, and by that I would mean that it actually, in the long run, saves the county money and therefore the taxpayers' money. But I would believe that that's the case, and the county should not embark on such a venture unless they thought it could. And to reinforce that, I think what the people should know at this point is kind of what the county has on the table facing it over the next 4 or 5 years. I just made a quick list of these things, and try to picture yourself in a business as a policymaker, knowing these things are in front of you, and then trying to figure out how you would like to get these things done financially well and good for the community. We have the community center that is on the table, and all the things that are involved with it in siting it, building, maintaining it financially, and so forth, and doing this with a minimal negative financial impact on the county. We have all of the 1% items that are on the table, and we need to delicately, and I say that advisedly, balance all of those together to make sure we can get them done with the funds and the type of funding we have available. We are right now being forced by the state to embark on a statewide social services redesign. Simplistically stating it means that we are being told that in some respects and in various ways, we have to consolidate our efforts with other counties in our area to provide social services. This is a very, very huge governance issue between counties that has to be worked out. We have an unknown but a very certain change is coming down the pike in terms of what's happening in the courts. We don't know exactly what it's going to be, but we can assure ourselves that we have significant changes of how we are going to provide court services. We have a huge communication issue. We are going to have to link to a statewide communications program for public safety known as ARMOR. We are also going to have to consolidate what we call PSAPs, or public safety answering points. That's where you get to when you dial 911, and we're going to have to consolidate that through other counties, another huge governance issue. We are going to be embarking on an airport construction project in the next 2 years. That's going to be about $1.2 million. By the way, the ARMOR project is a $2.2 million issue. We have employee restructuring that's taking place with retirees leaving us here shortly. And we have to manage the business relationship if we are going to be lucky enough to get the grant for the broadband or fiber build-out. That's on top of ever-growing problematic human resources issues that we have. That's what I think is facing the county. That's my list, and I'm sure that others could add to that list too. So that's the question we have facing us. If the right people are in place to handle these things, do I think that it is in the best interest financially for the county and the citizens? I do.
Thank you, Bob. Let's move to the city for a minute here. The community center pool issue, Mayor Hakes, will likely involve coordination with the county, as we just heard, and the school. So what can the city do to help make that happen, this cooperation?
Thanks, Jay. Excuse me. The city, right now, we manage our own pool. So we do have some expertise in what it takes to manage a swimming pool and also other recreation facilities. And we have, as a city council, gone before the county board to ask for a seat at the table. And we'd like to help. We'd like to participate in the decision making. We'd like to help dust off all of the work that's been done over the previous probably 10 years to build a community center and help make it become a reality. One of the roles I see the city also playing is advocating for the public and what we think the public wants. The 1% sales tax has passed. That was the number one goal the city council identified back in the beginning of 2009, and we were thrilled. Tim Kennedy and Kay Costello worked for over a year on the 1% committee. Jan Sievertson led the effort to help pass that tax, and each of us advocated for the passage of the 1% tax with the idea that a community center and a pool would be funded. When I participated and looked at the results of what happened in the listening sessions and the public meetings that were held as part of that effort that the county led, the swimming pool community center was the number one identified project by the public. And so we feel that there's a lot of synergy between what the county wants, what the public wants, and what the city has identified as a major issue for us. And we're just thrilled that it passed, and we're ready to help make that dream become a reality.
Beth Schwartz, enrollment's declining. We've talked a little bit about this so far this evening. State funds have been shifted. There's talk of reductions in the per pupil aid amount. So where is the money going to come from to operate in coming years for ISD 166?
Well, you know, one of the biggest frustrations in a public administration and in trying to figure out our funding is simply the fact we don't know how much revenue is coming in each year. It's almost a guessing game because it's gotten so much worse over the last year or two. The state says we're going to get so much, and then they shift it, and then maybe we're not going to get this. So I think the district needs to seriously look for other dependable funding, because as we look to plan for 3 to 5 years out, we want to make sure that we're relying on sources of funding that is going to be there. And so probably the most logical and number one issue of good dependable funding would be to look to Cook County voters to support a tax referendum to help the district with educational costs.
Now there's referendums and there's referendums. I think you have referred to this as an operating referendum.
That's correct. And the operating referendum is a tax increase which would go to the school that allows us to use the money as we see appropriate. It's not designated for building, like if you would bond for a school building or something like that. This is money that can be used to keep the lights on, to buy books, to enhance programs, to maintain programs. Because over the next 2 years, we're going to be looking at anywhere between $600,000 and $700,000 of reductions if we do not find another place for revenue. And that's quite a bit of money. That's almost 10% of our budget, which is huge. There are some other possibilities. We're starting to investigate philanthropic fundraising and also grant opportunities. We're constantly looking for those. The problems with grants is that, again, it's money that's there and then disappears, but at least maybe it can help us get us through the next 3 to 5 years in some uncertain times. But again, the number one option right now for the school district is to go out for an operating referendum. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Stover, electronic medical record keeping, you mentioned that earlier in the program, and it's getting a lot of publicity all around the country. So what's that mean for us, and where are we exactly in the process?
Well, the state of Minnesota has mandated a certain date for all healthcare facilities to be electronic. It's in a couple of years. I think it's 2013. But the Sawtooth Mountain Clinic went electronic in April of 2008. We went live. It was a steep learning curve for those of us over 40. Those of us under 40 did much better. Thank you, Lisa Zoller. But the old people held trouble. And so I think right now we've actually seen in the last few months that we're starting to reap the benefits of having that. We're definitely being able to retrieve more data to make sure that what we think we're doing right, we're actually doing. I think particularly in terms of diabetes, congestive heart failure, asthmatics, we're tracking in a better way. I think many of our patients have seen that in the room in their annual physicals. We can pull data of their blood pressures, their lab data, in a much clearer way. It's easier to retrieve. Definitely has improved pharmaceuticals in terms of the safety for prescriptions and transferring prescriptions to other places, as well as making sure we're tracking and much more reliably. But right now it's affecting people on a day-to-day basis in the room, and we'll see in the next few years that it's going to affect how our clinic chooses to make certain changes in providing care, because to really see if we're doing are we doing what we think we're doing. We've been tracking what we've been doing ever since we became a community health center, but now we'll be able to apply that data better to other community health centers, other rural communities, other communities in Minnesota. And it's allowing us to go more with the best practices that is really becoming a dominant
thing. Well, you're a small rural clinic, and this is an electronic expansion of that, but are small clinics like this one, will they stay relevant over the years?
Rural community health centers provide health care to actually the majority of people in the state of Minnesota at this time. And I think I can say that not because the majority of the population is urban in Minnesota right now, not rural, but where do they go and vacation and break their legs? Well, they do it here in Cook County. So we do provide a fair amount of health care for, if you think of the percentage of health care we provide for people that don't have a 55604 zip code, it's quite a bit. And so I think the state of Minnesota has been very proactive in looking at how they're balancing out the needs of rural versus urban. There's some things called baskets of care that'll be coming up in terms of helping to package so that consumers too can look at what they're getting and a whole package from the start of their decision-making on certain illnesses. I guess I see difficulties for rural areas because the provision of some of the, mental health is probably the best one to look at. There is a goal now for people with depression to have an intake evaluation that is an hour and a half. In a clinic of our size where we are general practitioners, that will not happen on an initial presentation. I don't have an hour and a half for someone when they come in as an emergency for depression. I do, however, know those people better than my urban counterparts do, and so I can also take care of them in a different way because I know them well enough to know who they are, where they're coming from, where they live, what their family of origin is. So, and I guess I'm kind of getting a little bit off the track, but I don't think there'll ever be a time when we see our primary care in this community being outside the community.
You're tuned to First Thursday Community Conversations. We'd like to hear from you. We're talking about the future of our community. We want to know what issues are important to you and how you'd like to see them addressed. 387-1070 is the number to call, 1-800-473-9847, or give us an email, wtip@boreal.org.
Scott Harrison, I want to put you on the spot for a minute. What's the number one challenge facing business in Cook County over the next several years?
Margins.
Okay, would you expand on that?
But if you define margins, Jay, as the number of dollars left over from the revenues that you bring in, less your operating costs prior to debt service and capital expenditures, that number for the rural tourism industry has been declining since 1999. That's very significant and not well understood, and locally or throughout the state of Minnesota. So there is enormous pressure on margins, which jeopardizes capital improvements and certainly does not give the majority of those businesses the ability to afford the healthcare challenges that might be coming. Mm-hmm. That is the number one challenge.
Now, with margins as the number one challenge, I mean, what is causing that narrowness the most? Is it because we just are coming out of a recession? Are there some costs of doing business that are hurting, or what?
It's because the growth in revenues is not keeping up with the growth in operating costs. So the difference, which is your margin, has been shrinking for a decade.
And the growth in revenues means what? Why isn't there growth in revenue?
Because there are less people coming up. For example, let me give you an example.
Go ahead.
If you go out the Gunflint Trail and you look at the lodging tax receipts in 2000 and compare it to the number of dollars in aggregate, not adjusted for inflation, in aggregate, collected in 2008, the number in 2002 was higher than 2008. Now, that means that when people are paying their bills out on the Gunflint Trail, they're using 80 cents to pay a dollar of operating costs.
And, of course, things aren't getting cheaper either, and inflation and everything else, so I understand what you're talking about. That affects everybody in the county because that's a job issue for one thing, right?
Jay, I'd like to piggyback on what Scott has said. And if I were asked the very same question, what is the biggest challenge for Cook County from our standpoint of the county board, I would have to say it is unequivocally the economy. And I don't know that people who have lived in Cook County most of their lives ever thought that that would be the big issue. But even for those people, it is a tremendously big issue. And I'll be honest, when I first ran for this, I was asked the same question that every county commissioner gets asked during the time they're running, and that is, what would you do, or what do you think is the most important thing about the economy? And every one of us has said we need to diversify. Now, let's be honest. We didn't put ourselves in this position, and I never wanted to be in this position as a county, but we are a single type of economy. We are tourism-based. What we were before in terms of being resource-based and all the things that made Cook County what it is, for whatever reason, and we won't talk about that today, but it's not there anymore. And so let's be frank. We are in the position where our economy is based on one thing. And what we have to do is accept it. And I didn't want to, but I think I do now accept that, and that we have to do everything within our power to make it possible for those people to want to come here, to want to visit here, and to want to stay here. And I think that's the thing that we're going to have to do.
I'd like to piggyback on both what you and Scott just said, because it leads into another question I have concerning fiber optic, or better known around here as broadband. And that affects, I think, everybody here in this room. Certainly it has an effect on businesses in the county and in the city. It has, we just talked about medical records, obviously the speed with which medicine can go across fiber optic is a lot different than it is on the system you've currently got. Schools, education, I think I've heard you say, Beth, that the Department of Education and the state, everybody in the federal government is acting as if we already had this in terms of the amount of what's expected from students. And Scott, I know that in the tourist industry, I've been to these meetings, I've heard you and others talk about the fact that, ooh, we can't provide this service that the customer wants. Not only can you not book them in a timely manner, but then when they get here, they want access to what is they're used to in their home communities before they come up here and break their legs, as Sandy said. So let's all talk a little bit about broadband. I mean, it still is not there yet. We're still waiting. Broadband, the county has appointed a governance of sorts. And so what about that as a growth factor for the community?
I'll tackle it. I'll go first.
Okay, Bob.
I was just in Chisholm today. And as I was leaving the Iron Ranges, what do they call that place in Chisholm, the Heritage Center or something like that?
Yeah, the Heritage Center.
I pulled out of there, turned right on my way back to Virginia, and on my left-hand side was a beautiful building with Northwest Airlines on it. And inside of that building, I was picturing a whole bunch of people with terminals in front of them, not talking to anybody. And I thought to myself, and this is after saying I don't think we can diversify our economy, but here I ended up by saying we need to get people to come here and want to stay here. I cannot think of anything other than getting the best possible fiber infrastructure into Cook County and being able to provide those jobs that can be done by people like they're doing at the Northwest building in Chisholm. I can't think of people not wanting to come to Grand Marais in Cook County to have the lifestyle that we have here and be able to go to work in a place like that, 8 hours a day, whatever it might be, go home, have their cup of coffee, or looking over Lake Superior or wherever they like to be. I think that's a challenge we can meet. We'll do it if we have the proper infrastructure. Not only will the infrastructure give us that benefit, but to be honest, we're going to be disconnected with the rest of the world, including our own state government for in a very short time if we don't get something like that in. So that would be my start on that. And I know we've been talking about this, and it can have the ability to fractionalize this community, but I know the importance of it, and I'll continue to try to strive there.
Okay. I'd like to have Beth answer that question a little bit in terms of education and what you're faced with and what education expects of its kids.
Well, Minnesota testing, or the Minnesota Department of Education, is putting more and more of their testing online, and eventually we're going to get to the point where we're going to have trouble, I think, with that process if we don't get some broadband in here. Currently, we do have trouble downloading, particularly videos. For example, Obama's address, President Obama's address at the beginning of the year, we couldn't show that when we wanted to because we were having trouble with download speeds, etc. Those issues, just the general issues of getting things to our own students, has become or is becoming an issue as DSL gets slower and slower with the backlog. The other piece that has potential to bring in revenue for the school would be to provide courses online for students in other districts, and then we get the revenue for those courses. And given the talent of our teachers and their flexibility and willingness to strive for excellence, I think we have a lot to offer other districts from our staff, and it could end up being a revenue maker for us if, in fact, we had the ability to run something like Moodle and run it effectively.
We've got about 5 minutes left in the program, and I'd like to have us all have an opportunity to answer one final question. And if you had to single out one thing that needs to change in Cook County for the next decade, what would it be? And let's start with Mayor Hakes.
One thing that we need to change in Cook County. I would say it's a pretty high-level answer that I have in mind, and that is the city, the citizens, the county, the school, everybody working together. And I know that at times it sounds a little sappy, but it's really, really true. We have to figure out ways to bridge between groups to make things happen, find solutions, put politics aside, and really try to work together, because I see that as a stumbling block. I think, you know, I'm a new mayor. I've been on the job a year, and I had sort of a Pollyanna view that we were going to be able to have dialogues and work things out, and it's been a lot tougher in that regard than I ever anticipated. And I would like to take a look at my own behavior and how the council works together and how we work with other groups and see if we can improve on that, because I think if we all work together, we can really achieve, you know, a lot of great things for our community.
Dr. Stover? one thing that needs to change in Cook County in the next, say, 10 years?
I think that's having a provision for our elderly people to continue staying in our community. And that means a well-funded and supported convalescent care center, you know, a nursing home. It means assisted living. It means expanded home care services and hopefully hospice at some point in time.
Beth Schwartz?
I hate to sound like a school student, but Mayor Hakes took my answer. collaboration, there's no doubt that particularly the school district, I think, needs to reach out to every corner of the county. This is not Grand Marais School. This is the Cook County School District, and we need to reach out to every area. In order to do that, I think there needs to be collaboration, as Sue mentions, between city, county, and the school district, and we really need to collaborate, especially as we look at these 1% projects.
Mm-hmm. Bob?
I was going to say the weather. But, exactly what Sue has said and what Beth has said. Let me expand a little bit further. There's got to be a catalyst to make us work together properly. I don't know quite how to say this, because I've had a hard time getting here myself. And it's the change that I'd like to see is the change that I've had a difficulty doing in myself, and that is the acceptance that the status quo of what Cook County was before is just not there anymore. That we, and I don't want to use the word change. I know that that word has been overused. But we need to be able and willing to understand that we need to move forward from here, that what can be in the future for Cook County isn't necessarily worse than where we are today. And the understanding, the list that Sue gave of her optimistic view of where we're going to be in the future is what we need to look for. So I would like to see the change being that we are willing to accept the fact that the future can be better, but it also needs us to recognize that we're going to have to make some changes.
Scott Harrison?
At the risk of agreeing with Commissioner Fenwick, and it certainly makes me nervous to do so, I would just say that the leadership by the county board, the ability, something needs to change to allow the county board to spend more of its time focusing on strategic and analytical issues and less on being bogged down in implementation issues. I think that that's number one.
Well, that will just about have to do it for tonight. You've been listening to First Thursday Community Conversation on WTIP North Shore Community Radio. Tonight we've been taking a long look back into the future, or back into the past and into the future. Our guests have been Dr. Sandy Stover, Superintendent Beth Schwartz from ISD 166, Commissioner Bob Fenwick, businessman Scott Harrison, and Grand Marais Mayor Sue Hakes. Thanks to all of you and to those of you who called in. And with Barbara Jean Johnson, I'm Jay Anderson. Thirsty Boots is up next. Good night.